this is good. All right. We are continuing our way through the planets. And what we are doing is we are using what is called the Chaldean or Chaldean order, meaning we start with the Sun, and then we do Venus, and then Mercury, and then Moon, and then Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, and then the octaves. I used to give a whole talk on the Chaldean order, but there usually isn't enough time for that. In fact, I haven't given that talk for about 15 years now. It's an interesting talk. All right, we talked about the Sun last time and about self-identity, and so let's talk about the Venus first, and the personifications that Venus represents. That is the specializations, like that Venus is pure this or pure that. Now, they don't have to be epitomes. They can also be decadences. That is a given quality taken to its lowest ebb in concentration, as well as a given quality in its highest ascent. The first personification of Venus is the personification of love. If you are truly a mystic astrologer and you're trying to understand someone, because that's the only way you can really be an astrologer, I don't think that you can really be a very decent intellectual astrologer, because no matter how much knowledge you have, it may not apply to the next case. But if you work by intuition and by feeling, you will always tune in on the truth. That is, to the degree that you practice concentration and the ability to put your consciousness into something. So the first personification of Venus is the personification of love. And so if you want to know how a person loves, how deeply a person loves, what the quality of their love is, focus on Venus. And when we're talking about Venusian love, we're not talking about divine love. And we're not talking about altruism, because those are things that are ruled by other planets. We're talking about individual love, the love for an individual, sometimes even the love for a specific thing. Love is one of those things that is objective and has to be objective. On the mandala, if you have the second house and Taurus, that is the love of things, or the love of stuff, or the love that possesses. And if you have Libra in the seventh house, it is the love of someone to love, not something to love. Direct objects of love are indicated by the seventh house. So it's important to know what we love, or who we love, and how we love. If we're fickle, we want to know that. Or if we're possessive in our love, we want to know that. And for this reason, there are some astrologers that the very first thing that they do when they look at a horoscope is look at Venus. And they figure, and I think rightly so, if they're doing it with intuition, if you can understand the quality of someone's love, you have a direct take on how advanced they are in terms of evolution. Because no matter what your experiences of any kind are, the more you have gained from past rebirths, the more you will be able to love. Love is something that comes out no matter what you've gone through. So, this is the kind of love that cares about things, or that cares about people. And this is the kind of love that expresses itself as affection. But it's also tenderness, it's mirth, it's joy, it's all of those kinds of things. So if you look at Venus in the chart, and it shows where the person is open to giving and receiving love. You can even tell, if you're sensitive enough, whether the person is more likely to give than they are to receive. There's no end to what you can do by sensitive perception. It's a skill that's very worth practicing. Astrology isn't always a skill that's worth practicing, because you can get involved in an astrological world and become removed from the greater reality. But if you can associate your consciousness with things, that's wonderful. Astrology is excellent if you do the two together. Out of loving and out of giving, there is an attraction that rises. In the desire world, which is not like this world at all, but is the world of feelings and emotions, passions and desires, and all of those things, in that realm, there is the principle of attraction and repulsion. That is, if you assert yourself, especially if you assert yourself to take something to you, that repulses others from you. But if you give yourself to others and you give your love to others, that attracts. Everybody wants to be around somebody who is loving and giving. And that is the way things work in the desire world. There's no reason at all to be lonely. I have a number of people that are shut-ins, either because of physical conditions or because of social, psychological conditions, that wonder why they're alone. And they come looking to me, looking for some grand experience, you know, like I'm going to give them some arcane knowledge of one kind or another. And I ask them, well, do you love people, and do you show your love to people, and do you give to people out of love? And they look at me like they've been cheated, like I'm some kind of a fraud or something like that. I come to you for profundity, and you tell me, do I love? But that is a matter of fact. You show me one person who is giving and loving, and that is the primary kind of thing that is coming out of them, that is unattractive, or that doesn't have people around them if they want them. And that would be a first for me to find that. So in this, in order to love, it means that some of the self has to be given up. So Venus represents sacrifice. It represents a kind of emotional devotion that goes with that sacrifice, so that you can see how they draw people to them, what they're willing to give up. You give up everything, and everybody will love you. That's a very hard thing to do at this point. So if you take Venus and put it in each of the different elements, there's a different quality. For example, if you have Venus in a fiery sign, it indicates somebody who loves with ardor, not somebody who's just going to sit back and say, oh, I love you so much. This is somebody that really pours out love and does it full bore. If Venus is in an air sign, the love is often fluent, but it is the air signs are a little thin. And the love is sometimes impersonal. You know, like Venus in Gemini, sometimes it's so impersonal that it can be fickle. Then you can turn it on and turn it off and not care. If Venus is in water signs, the kind of love is kind of sudsy. And it makes all kinds of flavors of emotions. It's like, like pouring all different kinds of Kool-Aid into the water. There are different ways that things can be sweet with flavor. But they're very hard to distinguish the distinct emotions of people who have Venus in Cancer, for example, because the love is so dissolved in the general emotional nature that distinct emotional forms are not easily seen. If Venus is in an Earth sign, it's a very concrete kind of love, very often tactile or sensuous or something of that nature. Sometimes it's even vicarious. It loves through a thing rather than directly giving love to someone. Well, this present, for example, is a symbol of my love, and so it's a vicarious giving of love rather than a direct spiritual kind of giving. Venus, in a fixed sign, for example, loves forever. It just never quits loving. In common signs, it's light and deft in its love, but it can be fickle. And in cardinal signs, Venus is usually highly demonstrative. And just by putting together those the attributes and the elements and putting Venus in the Venus that is common to both of them, you have a pretty good beginning of understanding of how to determine the love nature of someone. As a being of love, what is often sacrificed is one's personal face. And that is that Venus represents the ability to forgive. It's the planet of grace, of graceful living. It'll forgive because the love and the unity that we share in love is more important than that I save face. Sort of its planetary opposite is Mars, and Mars is the planet that will fight in order to save face. Another kind of personification of Venus is a concrete personification of beauty or of beautification. This is the sign, or this is the symbol, or the focus of grace. When you say that someone is graceful. Or sometimes the word attraction can be stated in another English word. We say that somebody is comely. And those are Venus qualities. For example, Venus in its home sign, its sense of beauty, that is in Taurus, is very sumptuous. It is an appreciation of beauty in all of its richness, in all of its elegance, and in all of, you know, the palpability of beauty. Sometimes Venus in other signs likes simplicity. Venus in Aquarius likes that almost Scandinavian furniture kind of thing, where a room is left open and stark, and the beauty is in very simple kinds of things. So good key principles for Venus are elegance, richness, smoothness. Sometimes it's air drawn and gentle. Sometimes it is rich and heavy. That'll go good on, go well on camera. I don't know if it's chalk dust or what. Sometimes there are people who like baklava. There are people that could eat a whole tray of baklava. I'm not one of them. One little piece throws me out. So this is the quality of love, of caring about something so that what is beautiful about it, what brings us to a kind of spiritual sentiment for our heavenly home. That's what beauty is. Beauty is when we recognize the unity of all things. And in that state of unity, which is the state of Christ consciousness or Buddha consciousness, everything is seen as one. And even distinctions within the one are called isometries. And we call them symmetries. And so one of the common things to beauty all over the world in all different cultures is symmetry. Venus in a chart represents an ascetic. Aesthetic, I should say. I didn't say that clearly enough. When you look at the chart of an artist, you try to see how the artist develops their aesthetic and what their aesthetic really is, which is a fancy way of saying is what is their taste. Venus is the planet of taste. On the other hand, if it gets decadent, it's the planet of tastelessness. But even the tastelessness has taste about it. You know what I mean? If somebody is painted up too much, there's still something beautiful about the way that they're overpainted. In fact, some people try to do the decadent thing and do it that way. So it's not only just capable of expressing and experiencing beauty, it evokes those feelings in others. When you're around some people, Venusian people, it's easier to see the beauty in things that you wouldn't normally notice. For me, the Venus person is very important because I actually have not a lot of taste at all in my character, and so I like going to art galleries, and I didn't see anything at first. But when you go with friends in the sharing, and their ability to see things helps you to see things. It's a wonderful experience to share the experience of beauty with someone. There's another Venusian thing about art galleries. If you want to pick up nice women, women who are trendy and who are tasteful, I have had in three different occasions in art galleries, I've had really classy women try to pick me up just because I would be talking with friends and they would be interested in the talk. And the talk would be moving to them, and they'd come right up and start conversations. I never took a name, ever. It might have been foolish. At one time, they had a Titian and a Raphael down in Chicago. And a friend and I were down. And they had other painters in the same era. And the painters were famous. And you looked at their paintings compared to the Raphael or the Tintorello, and it was like they were beginners because they stood out there so beautifully. And I was talking about the fact that Raphael was John the Baptist in a previous rebirth. And I was talking about like how it had to do with, in one life, he could see the light. In the next life, he carried it out in the middle of the age of Pisces when art was the big thing. He could see that light into the painting itself. And I was talking about that, and this beautiful young woman comes up, and she is elegantly dressed. And she's been around. She drops the fact. She said, it's so much nicer seeing these paintings like this than if you see them at the Uffizi. Because at the Uffizi, you're only given a few seconds, and that's it. And she also mentioned the fact that she had been at the Prado and a few other places. And she was with this stately old woman. This is probably has nothing to do with it. It does have to do with Venus. With this stately old woman, you knew there was money there. But I never took a name. You know, the beauty is enough. You can see, obviously, that I was tempted. This is a planet which, if you get on its right side or on its wrong side, depending on your character, is the planet of luxury. And it's the planet of wanting luxury, whether you can afford it or not. For some lowbrow people, luxury is a package of M&Ms. It's that kind of a quality. Obviously, this is a planet of fashion. It's a feminine planet, so women respond to it more than men. I should say that differently. Those of us who are reborn in female bodies respond more actively to Venus than those who are reborn in male bodies. And this we see all the time. Women dress for other women. They want to look good. Whether men see them or not, they know they'd do better attracting men if they didn't wear anything. But if they want to communicate with other women, they do that with the quality of their dress. So the thing about Venus is, as a matter of beauty, if something is beautiful, you don't feel a necessity, I think, of trying to persuade others of beauty. If they see the beauty, they see it. And this is what Venus tries to do. Artists do not have to explain their work. If something is beautiful, it stands for itself, and an explanation of beauty is extraneous. So take that, all you art appreciation people. there is something good to art. Art is another personification of Venus. It is the means of expressing love. It is the means of bringing beauty into manifestation. Art is how one sees the invisible, the intangible unity of all things and sees it into forms of expression. It doesn't matter what the medium is. It is what is carried through that medium. So Venus is an artificer, and it entices us. Art isn't for the object of art itself. You learn that very quickly, because if you make objects of art that, you know, they're beautiful, they're wonderful, but there are an awful lot of people who don't have good taste that own $100 million Van Goghs or something like that. With the object of the art is to get you, if it's painting, for example, is to get you to see something that you have never seen before. And so the art goes beyond the objects of art, and it goes into the inner consciousness that we all share. It's equivalent to what happens with Mercury. Some people are very good with words, but the words are only important in that they convey meaning, and it's the invisible meaning. In the case of Venus, art carries a sense of beauty, or it carries love, or something of that nature. Usually, art has the quality of being soothing, of calming, and of comforting. Yes, there is jangle art, I guess you could call it that, but the very nature of Venus is to soothe. It's to bring one to a peaceful state, because in that peaceful kind of serene state, it's much easier to love other people. You don't have, you're not dealing with things that upset you all the time. So there is something about art that has the quality of being pleasing. I think what most people don't like about a lot of so-called modern art, which is very good, is that they have to work to be pleased, and they have to abstract themselves from things to be pleased. And many people just want the recognition of something that is just sweet and pleasant. There is one particular art that represents another personification of Venus, and that is socialization. Venus is the socializer. Socialization has several Venusian qualities about it. First of all, people need to be attracted together. In the cosmic mandala, the universal ascendant has the quality of Aries, and that is a standalone asserter. I'm a pioneer, like I'm a cowboy. I'm out in the West. I stand all alone. But when you get to the second half of the mandala, and you're entering into the hemisphere that is for greater society, that is brought about by Venus through Libra in the seventh house, and that is socialization. So the attraction is to bring people together so that they can recognize their common unity. So Venus does that very thing. If someone is a host or a hostess that is extremely Venusian, they can attract people together that would never be in the same room with other people. And sometimes when you are in the same room with someone that you wouldn't normally be with, very interesting things come out. I remember I have a friend who is a first name basis close friend with Deepak Chopra. And she wrote a book. He wrote the foreword for it. And then she had a signing at her parents' place in Chicago, and there were, everybody in the place was multimillionaires. And here I come in. Who are you? You know, and it was a social thing where you were coalesced together. And it's interesting because I spent most of the afternoon talking to a brain surgeon. And it was really interesting because we actually got into spiritual subjects. It had to be because of something material. And he told me that if he does a 4-hour or longer brain surgery, his consciousness is so much in the right hemisphere of the brain because he has to watch extremely, extremely careful. He said, I get out of the operating room and my brain, my consciousness is so right-brained, I cannot talk. It takes him a few minutes before he can get back into the left hemisphere, which is the hemisphere of words, and he can talk again. So that's the kind of thing that Venus likes. It isn't just that social la-di-da, we all get together and party and smile at each other. Sometimes it is that way with Venus. But it is a belief that if you bring people together, it is for the good of all of them. It likes happy celebration, and it likes merriment, and it likes kindred spirits, but it realizes that even antisocial people need to be loved, and they need to be loved in interact with other people. Sometimes I feel like I'm in a room often with nothing but antisocial people. It's a very unusual kind of collection. So it takes joy in seeing people like other people. That's the heart of socialization. Another thing is that Venus rules oils. We'll come to that a little bit later on. And oils are lubricants. And they make things flow easier and they reduce friction. And the Venus in someone's character indicates how well they are socially lubricated. And I don't mean by alcohol. But sometimes that's necessary. People are uptight. They won't love until they let all the inhibitions down. It's sad that they have to become intoxicated to do that. But it's that ability to smooth things over so that people can get along with each other. Is an ability to put people at ease. There are other planets who do that, but Venus is especially good at that. All right, charm. Charm is the ability to persuade using verbal or especially nonverbal means to persuade people to come to some kind of new understanding. Venus is the personification of charm. It's a different kind of communication. It does it not only from love, but it does it because it cares. This is something like this is a charming that goes beyond human interactions. You know, there are people who can tame animals, even wild animals that are timid or wild animals that are vicious, but they know just how to charm them and bring them to a state that they can be tamed. So taming is a special variety of charm, and that is a Venusian type of quality. The best people that I've ever seen, I had a friend that had a wolf as a pet, and she didn't do it by discipline, she didn't do it by fear, she didn't do it anything. Did it by love. And that's the kind of charming, quality that Venus has. Now, it's difficult to talk about something like this because the qualities we're talking about don't necessarily use words, and they don't lend themselves to words. In fact, people who are just words people have a hard time with this. You know, it's very hard to talk about love. But talking about love and loving are two very different things. So when we're talking about charm, you know, how do you know, some writers who are very good can put a description of charm into words. I don't know if I'm that good at doing it. Affection or demonstration. love can't be for itself alone. It has to be extended. If you love someone and you try to not express that love, that's a horrible thing. You're trying to do something that is basically impossible. And the expression of love, one of the best expressions of it, is affection. Especially if Venus is in earth, and not, maybe not quite so much, but in fire. It has, fire and earth are the real expressive, affection-expressive people. Sometimes the affection is tender. Sometimes it's exciting. Sometimes it's sensual. Sometimes it's provocative. So like whether it's touching or embracing or just having a very a silence that is so dense with affection that you know that the other person loves you. You don't have to always be active. Of course, when Venus is active, it is the queen of personal affections. I believe it is Venus that invented the butterfly kiss. You know what a butterfly kiss is? Everybody knows what a butterfly kiss is. It's where you come up to someone so close and then you caress them. Of course, Venus in something like Aries or Leo knows what those love bites are all about. I won't say anything more. I had a friend once that had Venus in Aries. And we never did become really close with each other. But when we started to get close with each other, she grabbed me by the scalp and pulled back like that. And I says, this is what Venus is in Aries is like. I said, enough for me. That's not my style. Oh, boy. One more personification that Venus represents is perfection. In perfection, Venus shows its faithfulness. Not only is that realm of complete unity a realm of beauty and symmetry, it's an eternal kind of consciousness. And I think for most people, the feeling of being in love, not necessarily the aroused desire that goes with it, but the feeling of being in love is for many people the closest that they ever get to eternity. They don't understand it. They feel that there's something eternal there. And there's a lot of cliches in society. Oh, I know you from a past life. I must have been in a big family last life because as I went through South America this winter, I met quite a few people who were absolutely certain that they were either my brother or sister in the past, in the most recent past life. So it must have been like a family of 50 or something like that, that I was in. That's possible. There's a man in Africa. What is he? I think he's up to 82 children that he has now. He has quite a few wives, yes. Yeah, it's a polygamous society. I think he's up to 82 children or something like that. Yeah, then it goes beyond the letters of the alphabet. Yeah, that letter. Aaron's for the double A, and Babetti for the double B. None of this will be worth anything, I guess, for the television, but that's all right. So when someone loves, they're faithful. It's very hard to get an artist to do something that is inconsistent with the aesthetic of that artist. When somebody believes that this is the way love is and love is expressed, it's hard to get them to not do that. You know, people will do things, will work on something and work on something and work on something for the love of it that they would never do for just money or duty or anything like that. We have a word in our language that means doing it for love. It's called amateur. amateurs always excel because they do something for love. They may not cut all the corners the way professionals do, but, you know, like it's March Madness time. Everybody likes to watch college basketball because the kids are doing it for the love of it. Then you turn on the NBA and they're in it for the money. And just this last week, an NBA player said, I'm through with this trying to be unselfish and working for the team. It just doesn't work for me. I'm going to play my own game now. What kind of love? You don't want to watch somebody like that, no matter how talented they are. So this is the quality of finishing. Whether it is somebody who goes to a finishing school to make the perfectly pleasing personality, or whether it is the finish of an object that you have made, not the floor of this room. Fortunately, we're not focusing the camera on the floor because it's not too finished, right? I'm in a happy mood. I've been so serious for so long here these last few weeks that it's time to play a little bit. The symbol. We can put the symbol up here. See, that's a semi-ancient U, somewhere between a V and a modern U. All right. The last time when we looked at the sun, we looked at one of the most basic elements of symbology, the circle. And we said that the circle represented spirit because it was without beginning and end, and that it could be of any radius and still be circle. Now, when we're introduced to Venus, we see another fundamental element of symbology, or especially planetary symbology. We see the cross. And the cross represents materialization. That is to say, remember when we talked about Aries a long time ago, we said when there is a vector of force at right angles, that is, at the right, things develop into a field, and that everything is built through that principle of the cross. So the cross represents matter, or it represents materialization, or it represents the construction of forms in matter, and the materialization of stuff and how it is held together is a big part of Venus. Venus represents the attractive part of it. But if we look at the symbol of Venus, there is a circle, and the circle is contiguous with the cross, meaning to say that there is a very important spiritual part to the character of Venus, as well as the material part, and the two are connected. But the fact is that the circle is above the cross, which means that the spiritual things take precedence over the materialization qualities. So spirit presides over form. And so this is, like if it is perfecting, like we were just talking about, or if it is facilitating, it is perfecting for that higher purpose, for a higher spiritual purpose. Venus does like stuff, it does like things, and it can represent attachments to things, but usually it's able to rise above that. Eventually it begins to understand, unless there's a very serious case of greed, it begins to understand that it is the love of those things that counts, and not necessarily only those things themselves. One other symbolization of the symbol of Venus is as a mirror. Venus likes to look pretty. And Venus is the sign that if it is shallow and material, it's the sign of coquetry. Or it is the sign of personal vanity, where one is captivated with the image of one's own person. And that's possible because, after all, it was created by a god, and it must have been an awfully good god for me to look that pretty. It's that kind of thinking, though it isn't usually thought out and put into words like that. So Venus can represent dilettante-ish things. It can represent narcissism. Not emotional narcissism, not self-aware narcissism. And it can be a personal indulger. I knew a woman that was up in her 80s. She was a housewife, a farm wife would be a better way of saying it. She was a very Venusian woman, very pretty woman. And they lived several farms over from our farm. And about 5 or 6 years ago, when my father was very aged, I used to drive him around. And he'd say, well, let's go up to Sheboygan County. And we went up to Sheboygan County, and we visited various neighbors. And this was a very Venusian type of woman. And up in her 80s, her day was, and she felt put out. Not that she was angry or anything like that, but she couldn't keep her consciousness on the conversation. She was always looking over to the television. And her day was sitting and watching the television, especially soap operas, all of that social love and all of that, and eating chocolates, fancy chocolates. He, on the other hand, was a prisoner of responsibility. Over the years, he was extremely ambitious, and he bought up all the farms in the neighborhood. He owned about 5 farms, including ours. And his son wanted no part of being a father after being a farmer after seeing what it had been to his father. And so here he is, 80 years old. He can't die because somebody's got to milk the cows. And it's that kind of guy. It was an interesting day, even with just a little short visit. All right, let's look at some myths of Venus. Aphrodite is the Greek name for Venus, but pretty much both the Greeks and the Romans, because of their own primitive nature, saw Venus as a goddess of indulgence and desire, even of debauchery and insatiable luxuriance. And that was what most people were capable of as far as love is concerned. The Greeks didn't even like their women. And they thought, well, the only way you can have love is if you love a man, because the man has such a positive ideal that puts before us. In fact, that's what they say in their writings. Venus was said to have been born from the sea, from the foam of the sea. Perhaps that relates to electromagnetic clouds or solar clouds or something like that, or precipitation of dust out of the atmosphere. I don't have a final answer for that. Another story of the creation of Venus is that when Saturn castrated his father Uranus, he let the genitals fall, and where they fell in the sea is where Venus was born. And that makes a lot of sense astrologically, because Uranus is a universal kind of love, an altruistic love. You love everyone equally, basically because you love everyone eternally. Venus represents specific love. So Venus is the lower octave, so to speak, of Uranus. They are both planets of feeling and planets of love. But one is of a higher kind of love and one is of a lower kind. That's not to say that Venusian love is really a low kind of thing. Venus was famous for having a girdle. And when she put this girdle on, she was irresistibly charming. Venus does like rich things, and sometimes girdles are necessary, male or female. And to this day, the planet Venus still is hidden. It's under all of those clouds. But it's the whole idea, if you activate love, who can withstand it? Who would want to? So this represents a kind of an intriguing nature. It's a planet of art and it's a planet of glamour. That is, if the art becomes an end in itself, the show and the appearance of things is more important than the beauty itself. And that's what glamour is. It promises all kinds of things. Obviously, that hidden behind the girdle and all of those qualities represent something that you find in the women's magazines in the grocery stores, what is called a feminine mystique. Not the mother mystique, but a feminine mystique, that there's something tremendously attractive about that quality. Venus marries Hephaestus, who is called Vulcan in the Roman Empire. And this is a cosmological myth, because Vulcan represents the highest quality of fabricating and creating and compounding things. When we as human beings are in our Vulcan stage of existence, in the same way that we take the stuff of the material world and make things out of them, the life that is in the stuff that is now the material kingdom, we will have raised it to a plant level, an animal level, and eventually a human level, where it is free to think for itself and become an indwelling spirit. And that quality is represented by Vulcan. And what this means to say is that the marriage of Venus and Vulcan, or of Aphrodite and Hephaestus, is that love leads to the ultimate of creative perfection. She has, even though she's married to Hephaestus, she has this heavy-duty sexual affair with Ares, Mars. And it's famous throughout all art history. Sandro Botticelli has a very famous painting of Mars and Venus, and it's just after all the action is over, because he's lying there asleep, you know, like he's out of it, and the little nature spirit fairies are playing with his helmet, and his lancer is there, but it's down like that, and she's sitting there looking at him, oh my man, but she's also got that cat that swallowed the canary look on her face, and it's quite a beautiful thing. They had an ongoing affair, and Hephaestus caught them in the act. He made a brass net, and while he was out, he could trigger the net from a distance, and he did, and they were both caught in bed with each other. And rather than being shamed, and rather than all of the other gods and goddesses looking down on it, they were all envious. They all wanted to be with her, even if it meant being caught. So she has a rather piggy, earthy, indulgent kind of nature. Remember, pigs are ruled by Taurus, which is ruled by Venus. The Greeks were just horrible about it. She slept with Dionysus, the wine god, the god of the Bacchanals, and the result of that union was Priapus. And Priapus was a very ugly god, but that was very popular because he had enormous genitals. Poseidon, or Neptune, always wants to unite with her, but he's always unsuccessful because basically he's ugly, and she can't stand to be around someone who is ugly. Of course, if it were true love, it would be able to see through all that ugliness to something beautiful, but that, you know, that wouldn't be a myth anymore. That would be some kind of heavy-duty analysis of a myth. She does sleep with Hermes several times. In fact, one of those unions is made famous in the book called The Metamorphosis by Ovid, which is a lovely poetry book to read. It talks about various different kinds of metamorphoses of different gods and nymphs and humans into other things. And as I recall, the story is that Hermes or Mercury is swimming in this pool, And somehow she seduces him and clasps onto him. And they each make a wish. And her wish, I think one is that they should be together, and the other is that this moment should live together. They should live forever. And then they are both united together into what we call a hermaphrodite, being that is a complete and total, having all of the male and female qualities. When you find the higher side of Venus, you find out that she's the goddess of the golden apples. And the golden apples are what the gods need to live. There's a lovely picture that you can see. If you see, or the North Pole, if you could see the magnetic North Pole with an energy vision, an etheric vision, you would see it coming out like a great big tree trunk, and it would spread over like an aurora borealis that went all the way down to the equator. And that is the tree. And sleeping in the tree are the two bears. And at the root of the trunk of the tree is where the dragon, Kaluber, circle is entwined around the tree. But in the tree are the golden apples, which are the stars. And it is those golden apples that is the immortal light, the immortal wisdom that comes from the divine being that is at the heart of every star, every sun, that is what is the property of Venus. And it is she that conducts it to them by bringing the apples of love. Well, it's going to be awfully long. We might have to do a single tonight and not a doubleheader because this is way too long. I don't know what we'll do. She was the lord or the lady of the house of Perseus, which we know as Persia. And so all those rich things like Persian rugs and the finery of Persia were ruled by Venus, including the stone fruit like apricots. You know that the Persians produced more different kinds of fruits and garden vegetables than any other society in China? Yes, they were really great at it. And do you know that one of our greatest things, and I'll harvest my first in about a month from now, my first asparagus. And asparagus was domesticated by the Persians. And in the Persian language, asparagus means literally mixed shoots. In the north, Venus is called Freya. She was the goddess of mirth, and she was the goddess of fertility. When you are that loving, you are productive. She was the goddess of boundless love, and she also was the goddess of the golden apples. The story of the golden apples is told very, very well in the first play of the Ring cycle by Wagner. It's Das Rheingold. And without the apples of Venus, all of the gods start withering away to nothing. They would disintegrate without that. Another northern goddess that is ruled by Venus is Fricka. And Venus, as Fricka, is the goddess of marriage, just as she is ruling Libra in the seventh house. It's the goddess of family responsibility. Now, the law is a representation of a union of cause and consequence. And it works in both directions. In the Plasagian creation myths, the first thing that was created was darkness. And the next thing that darkness created was love. And the thing that love created was the law. And everything else after that was under the law. And when you look the other direction, you find it in one simple sentence by St. Paul when he says, the end of the law is love. So in the worlds of manifestation where things have to be different, from each other, because that's the purpose of manifestation, to have varied experiences, to bring out different parts of our being. The connection of those things isn't just a symmetric connection, it is a connection of all manifest things through the law, and that is through cause and consequence. And so that is the kind of thing that is represented by Venus. It is the binding things. So Venus represents contracts, all treaties and things like that are held together. Even what is called the social contract, that we are all bound together to work together because we are one society. And no one can be a standalone person by themselves because they have nothing to live by. So this is the goddess of keeping sacred laws and sacred traditions. It's also a goddess of decency, because when you have the quality of love that is behind the law, there is automatically a feeling of decency. All right. It's going to be only one. We're only going to do one tonight. It's going to be too long otherwise. Planetary figures. This is the most important practical part when we're discussing planets. Every important person in our lives represents one or more planets. And every planet in our life represents one or more people. Planets are people, and the people in, if we want to understand our relations with other people, if we can planetize them, and find the planet that they represent, and then look at it in our horoscope, we have some idea of an abstract structure of what the spirit is trying to accomplish through this kind of interaction. Very important to do. I just made a discovery in the last few days about planetary people. One kind of person is your lover, especially for those who are reborn in male bodies, because the Venus is more latent, and the Venus people are the people who bring out our capacity to love. They're the kind of people that might love you no matter what. You see it happen all of the time. You see a couple together and you say, what's she doing with him, or what's he doing with her? And you can't understand it because it doesn't make sense, because it isn't a logical thing. Well, it is an amorological thing. That means that person brings out love out of the other person, and that's important. So any person who evokes love from you, there are some people you may not even like them, or they may not ever be able to understand anything you say to them, but when you're with them, you just cannot help but to love them. One of the dearest friends I have in life is someone that everybody loves because she loves everybody. She was a natural spiritual student when I met her. The two most important words in her life were love and service. And I just like being around her. She's imperfect, like everybody else is imperfect. She makes mistakes. And sometimes her personal life is a shambles, but she loves. And I feel good being around her because she loves. Sometimes people love you, and because you're not perfect, all of your selfishness, when it is bathed in love, it becomes painful. To say it any other way. If you find, for example, a Venus square to Mars, and someone gives you their love in such a circumstance, you recognize your imperfections, you recognize what's not right about yourself, and it hurts. It's exactly the way Christ says it in the Bible: love your enemies, and it will be like heaping coals upon their forehead. I have Venus in the third house, and I love writing love letters. I don't write real juicy ones, mine are much more philosophical. You have Venus in Sagittarius, and that's been a real problem because women soon figure out that I love philosophy probably more than I love women. And while it might be nice to receive philosophical love letters, they say, how about a little humanity? How about a little touchy-feely thing? Well, a little bit, but not very much. Things that you love. Not only lovers, but things that you love. I have a friend that is an exceedingly loving man. And he loves aviation. And he's married to a woman who does not believe in anything he believes in. But the marriage works. And the kids love both of them. Because with his boy, he makes airplanes. It's all right. Radio-controlled airplanes. And, the father and son do things together. And so a common love for those objects brings about a love relationship. Anybody who is what we would call an aficionado or a diehard. My sister and I have Venus in the third house, and Venus is in Sagittarius, and we had a relationship that we always made up humor, and we had a great time having fun and laughing about things. Another personification of Venus is girls or young women. That is how you relate to young women. One of the most interesting of all that I have found is Venus-Saturn aspects. Saturn represents time and age and maturity and all of those kinds of things. And I have found with Venus-Saturn aspects that when there's insecurity, even insecurity like in a trine that will eventually someday be very secure, the person will tend to marry somebody older out of their insecurity because they want to be around someone. But then after a certain age in life, they become insecure about their attractiveness, and then they marry somebody much younger. And you find that relationship with each of the relations is different than the other. That the later marriage with the younger person brings out more of the love qualities that they could never bring out with the older person because the older person was much too stodgy. They were much too mature and responsible. But all that love they always wanted to bring out but were never able to bring out, they can bring that out with a younger person, and they can be in sort of a second childhood again, and sometimes it makes for a fairly good marriage, even if there's a long distance. I'm compensating because I'm thinking about meeting a young woman. Not really. Peacemakers. If you have someone in your life that always can put themselves into the center of things and see things very closely from both points of view, you have a Venusian person. In our society, we have a person who is a very Venusian person and a very honest person that is a superb peacemaker, and that is former President Jimmy Carter. And I've heard an interview with him on Terry Gross when he talks about peacemaking. And boy, the man really has an understanding of what it takes to make peace. And, like he says, both sides have to feel that they got the better of the deal. Now, if you're a logical person, you don't think that's possible. But if you're a Venus person and you realize that there's always more love and there's are intangibles that go beyond the material things, you realize that that is not only possible, but that is likely. And if you can get them to recognize those intangibles, and boy, it's beautiful. The other thing that he said about making peace that I thought was so good, he says, you will never have successful, peaceful negotiations unless all parties recognize that they cannot do without making peace, and they cannot do even without negotiating. So these are people who are capable, through themselves, of spreading their care to two or more other parties so that there is enough unity so that, again, some kind of treaty or some kind of pact can be made. Artists, if you have artists in your life, for me, some of the happiest, Venus is the most perfect planet. I'm allowed to talk about my own horoscope and my own life now because it's excellent examples, and that way I'm not gossiping about other people. I'm gossiping about me. But Venus happens to be my very best planet. It's not the strongest one, but it's the only planet that makes no afflictions whatsoever. It makes only trines and sextiles, and fairly strong ones at that. But it's always been inspiring to me. And for me, the mixture of love with the Sagittarian aspiration results in a mixture that is inspiration. I visit with artists and see what they're doing, and I want to run home and do my own thing because I am inspired by that. And so that is what the Venus kind of person in your life can be like. It's always important when you see somebody who lives for beauty, for example. I've known some really very good artists that made it a pretty big time, too. Socializers, the people who invite us to dinners and parties and other social events. Through them we hang out together and we develop bonds of affection. And through those people you're brought into contact with other people that you'd never ever be in contact with. I have a friend that lives up in the North Woods. He's one of my Venus people. I can't help but to love him, no matter how far out he may be. But through him, I go to visit him, and there are backwoods characters that are unbelievable in their crudeness and in the odd things that they do. And I never get to see those people, and I never get to appreciate them. But when I hang out with this guy, I see him all the time. They get us to express. Indulgers. You know, the person who always brings candy to the office or always brings party and brings things for a party-like atmosphere. They mean well and they mean love, but it isn't always the best thing. And they say, oh, just try another helping. Just once won't hurt you, you know. And they're the perfect kind of tempting people. And if you're ready to be led into temptation, they're the ones that'll do it for you. In this, in indulging, you can indulge even in your person, such that people who are fops, for example, or people who are gold diggers who will try to get you for your money or something like that. I'm too introverted to have, I don't have any Venus indulger people in my life. I indulge by myself all alone, too introverted. Colors, in the external, Venus rules yellows, various different flavors of yellows. It rules also some yellow greens and some copper greens. And above all else, in color, Venus likes the pastels. Doesn't like the garish colors of Mars, for example. In the metals, copper is ruled by Venus. It's an excellent conductor, and it's an excellent bearer of colors. It crystallizes easily, naturally, so it is not a restrictor. It is, together with Mars, a blood builder. Without having sufficient Venus, it's as deadly as not having sufficient Mars. I've had the very fortunate opportunity to work with the horoscope of a child that was a porphyria child. You know what porphyria is? It is that very rare disease where you can't produce red blood vessels. It's called the Dracula's disease, because there is an intense longing to drink warm blood. And it was very obvious that the condition was due to a lack of copper. And because of the lack of copper, they couldn't attract the Mars. And it was a very strong Saturn-Venus aspect, I think almost exact to the minute or something like that. And there was a kind of social insecurity in there, and there was a lot of social blackmail and things of that nature. And I can't go into it, it's too long to go into. Plants, trees, herbs, and foods. The whole rosae family, which includes not only the roses, but the apples and the grapes and things like that. Most of the fruits that we eat are Venusian fruits, because even the stone fruits are ruled by Venus, especially the peaches. So when we say that somebody is a peach of a person, we mean that they are a very lovable person. Even though mangoes probably taste better, we don't call somebody a mango of a person. They say, what are you up to? The mints are ruled by Venus, because they are the planets that settle the stomach, and they're perfuming. Herbs that are called aromatics, not harsh aromatics, but aromatics that are soothing. In fact, any herb that is a soother or an emulsant is a Venusian herb. And all the oils are ruled by Venus, especially the essential oils. Again, they're lubricants. And the simple sugars are ruled by Venus. The planetary emissary is Anio. This means to say, if you're trying to understand something about love and you don't understand it and you need help, if on Venus's day, which is Friday, Freya's day, at sunrise, if you concentrate on your issue and ask for the help of Anil and find Anil in yourself, not in some kind of possession or mediumship or anything like that, but you have something in yourself that resonates to Anil. And if you talk to that as though you were talking to the Archangel Anil, you will be helped by the Archangel Anil through that within yourself. It's a thing that is not practiced much anymore. Physiologically, Venus rules the thymus gland. And that is where the blood cells are stored in the mother in the first early years of life. It is a sacrifice by the mother that she stores the blood. It has that quality of pacification. And it is a regulator. It is a regulator by love. The venous circulation is ruled by Venus. I should say the venous circulation is ruled by Venus. It is the sacrifice to clean things up. It is the carbonated blood. It is the high ash blood. And so it's more of a sentimental Venus, a looking back at what has been burned up. It's cleaning, taking the waste away. The throat and the tonsils and the adenoids and most of the filters in the body are Venusian. They will absorb and absorb and absorb till they blow themselves out almost. Then the big filters in the body, the kidneys, are ruled by Venus. They are the filterers and they are the balancers. A blood sugar count is ruled by Venus. Too much sugar in the blood means that you want too much Venus. You find people that have tendencies toward diabetes have that personality that they want everything to be lovey-dovey even when it isn't, and they want none of the martial qualities, no anger or anything like that. And that's fairly common. That is a characteristic of the classic diabetic character. In the special categories, Venus is a benefic. It's called a lesser benefic, because even if it's in bad shape, it still blesses. Love, no matter how much it is perverted, is still love. It is called a nocturnal planet because it is cool and moist. Not in a dank way, but in a soothing kind of way. It wants nothing too bright, which it considers something to be gauche. It is a feminine planet, and especially rules young women. For me, I like prepubescent young girls before the hormones set in, because they have all the loving sweetness about them. When I was in South America, I met a little girl that must have been about 11 or 12 years old, and her name was Hillary. And she was about 11 years old, going on 40. She was one of those people that was wise, and she was even counseling her own mother. And it was just so nice to see, because she had that pure. She gave me a book in Spanish at my reading level. She just figured out that this is what you need. It was the Iliad, with the Apples of Descent and the Trojan War and all of that. It was just perfect. And I really liked the, that to me has that purity of idealism of Venus and Sagittarius. It is a static planet, meaning to say that it tries to settle things and hold them in one state, and therefore it tends to be socially conservative. Even in its decadence, it's socially conservative. As an evolutionary planet, it is a social planet, and it represents the refining aspects of society. So it is a sophisticate or a people person, and sometimes too refined. Venus rules Taurus and Libra. So that if someone has Taurus on the cusp of the 11th house, it means that they're very likely to have lifelong friends that never give up on them. But if Venus happens to be in the third house, that would mean that those friends would come through shared reading or maybe even sharing rides together. If somebody has Libra on the cusp of the ninth house, it would be someone that would travel for the sake of art, or someone that would have a religion of art, or of the beautiful. But if Venus was in the first house, it would be seeing the religion of art and beauty in the immediate circumstances. And the person would try to make their body and their personal expression to be an epitome of beauty. Now, these are things that the indirect application of astrology, that Venus would affect Taurus and Libra and whatever was in Taurus and Libra from wherever it is, and Taurus and Libra, whatever happens in them would affect Venus, is extremely important, because if you don't learn that, you will never learn astrology. And if you only learn about the signs in the houses and the signs, planets in the houses and the planets in the signs, you will have direct astrology, but you'll be missing the great part of astrology that is indirect through the rulership of cusps. And you have to start observing that more than you observe the behavior of signs and houses and things like that, to find the connections between the... I'll tell you the one that I just found out. My Venus is in Sagittarius and the third house, but it rules the ninth house. And just today, I learned that for the last 20 years, I tend to fall in love with, or at least have strong, attractive love to women who are a long distance away. And at first I thought that was due to, well, you don't want to get involved, and if they're, you know, if they're a few thousand miles away, you don't have to worry. It's when they're next door that things are a problem. But no, I'm just finding out that that's the circumstance. When I was a young man, it's interesting to know, Taurus on the on the ninth house, I found out when I did a retrospection of all my long trips, and in all my long trips, they were dominated by eating patterns. And it was sort of like saying that the trial of my practical philosophy was shown in my eating habits during long trips. So there are, that's pretty abstract, and you don't want to get that far right away, but that's what's important about the rulership. The rulership connection between a planet and the sign or signs that it rules is fundamental to understanding astrology. It's not easy, but your success will be better if you learn it. Some people never learn it. I have seen astrologers who work with harmonics, and they take things to the ninth harmonic, and they got all of these, and they say, see, it becomes obvious. And no, it was right there in the basic natal chart, just as simple could be if you looked at the relationship of rulership. Detriment. Venus has its detriment in Aries. It doesn't like to be that brazen. And, there's something like love. The better part of love is hidden. And Venus has its detriment also in Scorpio. Love and sex are two very different things. And if a being is a being of pure love, it's not so sure about sex because, the uniting things of love are sort of countered by the disintegrating effect of selfishness and sexual passion. It has its exaltation in Pisces. And there is where the quality of sacrifice comes out the best. It has its fall in Virgo, because it gets distracted into petty little things and even likes gossip and things like that. If Venus is in the east, which means anywhere in the first house and halfway up into the 12th house, the body is more graceful and it's more smooth because it's a little bit rounded out more. It's what they used to call, and it's a word I like a lot, but some people don't, especially women. It means it makes for a little bit more of a dumpy body. Remember, you've never heard the word dumpy? Yeah.
What did you say about this?
If it's in Pisces, you mean? Yeah. Exalted. Sacrifice is the quality. Well, it usually gives a very good sense of balance. And the body is well proportioned. It often makes round faces. We had a friend that just passed on a couple years ago that had a round face that looked exactly like a circle, and he had Libra rising. Sometimes it's round with a sloping forehead, but we'll let Shakespeare talk about that. The skin is usually softer, and no matter what racial stock, the skin is usually a little bit darker when Venus is in the east. The skin is usually oilier when Venus is in the east, and especially the hair is oilier. And Venus in the east tends to make dimples. That's why it says pretty people. Venus in the east is usually a stylish dresser, sometimes a little bit overweight, a stylish overweightness, and they have a very plush lifestyle. And there's a very strong attraction to sweets. Now, that's all I have for this. I don't think we're going to do Mercury because we've already been about 75 or 80 minutes. Now, we have to decide what we want to do because I'm not going to continue the class into June. So over the next week, please think about it, about whether you would like to have class a couple nights a week so that we can get everything in before June. And the second night would most likely be Friday. So otherwise we won't get all the information down. So think about it, if that's what you want to do, or if you want to try to do two in a night, which is very tough, because I think the second talk would suffer because of all of the energy put into the first one. If you have any other suggestions, bring them up. Or we could have an incomplete course. That's all right. That's all right, too. Any questions? All right, thank you very much.